What is your take on the current phase of the pandemic right now? Where are we right now?
I teach in a medical college in South India, and in fact, our hospital is a teaching hospital which became a major center for COVID care in the city. At one time, totaling about 600 patients. But as you said, my role was not central, but we were coordinating care in this hospital, building up capacity, so, and also taking care of patients, and in fact, still continue to take care of patients right now. So we obviously, the dynamics of the pandemic have changed from time to time, and as in other parts of India, the second wave really hit us badly here, and with a lot of patients and considerable mortality. And this being a teaching hospital, people would come in very, very sick condition. Things have improved in terms of numbers since then. So we did see the graph declining, but it has not disappeared totally ever. And recently, again, we have been seeing the numbers showing a slight uptake again. And by and large, these are still amongst the unvaccinated population. So it has not disappeared, never disappeared, but it is now seems to be reappearing in some way. But the impact on the health system, on people's ability to seek care for their diverse problems, has been really huge. And this crisis of healthcare is embedded in a crisis of economics, of food. So really, it is just a crisis which has affected large numbers of our people who are not doing so well in any case, in the best of circumstances, and hit them badly. I can quote, during the pandemic, we saw that whoever was able to come had to negotiate multiple obstacles on the way, whether it's in, we are at the border of Karnataka and Kerala, so whether it's negotiating the border or from one district to another, there were various kinds of restrictions. So the people who ultimately even came to us had to face multiple obstacles. And this was for patients who had COVID, who were coming in an ambulance. But we also found that a number of people, when these transports started, they would just take the public transport and land up in a very, very serious condition with oxygen saturations in the 70s and coming to the hospital. The non-COVID patients suffered very deeply because surgeries had been scheduled for patients. Patients were on cancer chemotherapy with interruptions. Patients with chronic ailments like diabetes, hypertension could not access treatment for this thing. For some of the critical chronic diseases, including tuberculosis, HIV, they had problems accessing medications, again, with a very deep impact. So it was all across the board, and whether it was primary care or secondary care, I don't think we'll be able to measure what the impact was. But anecdotally, every patient who came to the hospital had tales to tell of, people trying to seek care and not able to do so. One patient recalled how he saw a young mother lose her life because of complicated labor, and she was not able to access care for obstetric emergency. So, to summarize, I would say we seem to have seen the worst of the epidemic, put the rest of the waiting behind us. But given the complexity of this virus, the fact that it is airborne, the fact that it can constantly mutate, I don't know whether we have really we can say with definiteness that there won't be a fourth wave. But hopefully with a large number of people now having got vaccinations, we hope not to see the same kind of levels of sickness that we saw earlier. And hopefully we might be better prepared in terms of oxygen supply, et cetera, this time.
What are the lessons that one can sort of point to from the experience of the last year and a half? A country like India, we have some of the lowest per capita spending on health, out-of-pocket expenditure is among the highest. Your health infrastructure is weak. So the pandemic hit at a time when you were not prepared for, forget COVID and how deadly COVID was. Even in normal times, you're not prepared to deal with infectious diseases in general, like tuberculosis or so many other mini pandemics that keep happening across different parts of India. So what is the bigger lesson if you want to be prepared for a pandemic the next round? I mean, not just what's happening right now, but say in the future, what should be done?
Yeah, so those are quite clear, the lessons from the pandemic. First of all, the COVID exposed many sort of pointed out the obvious to us. For example, whatever we talk in terms of healthcare India, which is basically disease care, the most visible functioning part of that whole system are the hospitals. But it became clear from the COVID pandemic that unless there's a system of care, and the system of care has to be strengthened most at the primary care level, which is where you can actually now detect cases and then do an assessment of severity and then make a reasoned decision on what to do with the patient. In the absence of a primary care system, which we have not built in India as we should have, you have a unhealthy focus on only on the hospitals and only on some aspects of care within the hospitals. But by and large in India, this is true for COVID as well as for many other diseases. The reason why we have such an overloaded health system in the hospital level is because we are simply not taking adequate care of these problems at the primary and secondary level. So if you had a system of care with a very strong basis of primary care, we could have handled this system better. And the lessons are from any system which has a strong focus on primary care as well as community-based care. For example, in Kerala, they could actually, they did not have the kind of overwhelming levels of sick people reaching hospitals as we saw in so many other countries. So simply that system of care where there is a health worker who is a very important part of the whole system, and ASHAs, I think all over India, despite the challenges, played a stellar role in the whole COVID pandemic. So I think the focus again has to shift on primary care to really, and this would be across, the lessons would apply across the the disease pattern. For example, most patients with hypertension in India do not ever get diagnosed as hypertension. Some of them just are picked up and they develop a stroke or develop a cardiac complication. But if there was an effective primary care system, then people would be screened for hypertension. People would be put on antihypertensives, and we would see much lesser number of people with stroke or other complications filling our hospitals than we are at the moment. Same thing is true for diabetes. It's a disease which can be dealt effectively at primary care level, but again, because of our deficiencies in terms of both the diagnostics available, the trained staff available, all the burden is being shifted upwards. The second thing that I think came as a lesson is that there is no real replacement for a strong public health system in India. The other thing was, of course, one was the private sector was simply not offering that scale of care. And secondly, it again brought to light that the private sector is a completely unregulated enterprise in India. So there were so many stories of you know, overcharging and very, very high bills from people who went to the private sector. The lessons from the pandemic were also that actually in some basic elements, our health system, even the public health system, was not really geared to handle any of this the scale of things. So in terms of diagnostics, we had to put up at great speed, you know, this network of molecular diagnostics across India, which I would say ultimately could get established and now is working, but it has to be now harnessed for all other diseases and not simply for COVID alone, because a lot of diseases simply don't get diagnosed. And we do not have an adequate capacity in the public health system, either at a hospital level or a public health level, to diagnose outbreaks in India. And that is one also one reason that we don't get early signals from the ground. So we do not have a good network of laboratories and the coordination to detect outbreaks in India. And whatever system has been built should be now geared towards that. The lack of the oxygen crisis that we saw again exposed the fact that in normal times, we were carrying oxygen from great distances. And when that logistic chain got disrupted because of the lockdown and the other features, we had the kind of, you know, situation that we saw in the in Delhi. So before that, the fact that our oxygen supply system was so fragile never got exposed. The third is the problem of intensive care in India. We had an outbreak not only of any disease, but a disease which could cause the most severe respiratory problem you can see in any patient, and that is an adult respiratory distress syndrome. And often the problem was oversimplified to the point of saying that, oh, we do not have enough ventilators. And then the focused then translate into ventilators. But ventilators cannot, even if ventilators are supplied to district hospitals, people should know how to use them. And the care of a patient on a ventilator is a different ball game, for which doctors, nurses in district hospitals in India are ill-equipped at the moment. So the care of a very sick patient at a district level hospital situation is something that this pandemic taught us, that we have to focus on making our tertiary care centers to truly tertiary, in that their ability to handle sick patients with respiratory problems has to be developed. So that was another lesson from the pandemic, that from now on, and if this capacity is developed of dealing with, you know, sick patients with respiratory failure, then it would benefit a lot of other patients with other diseases, including pneumonias, including poisonings, etc. And but it cannot be a strong will to train staff and retain them at the district level. So that's another outcome. I think the fact that COVID care, to whatever extent it happened in India, the fact that diagnostics were free and treatment in the government hospitals are free, I think this whole thing needs to be translated now in the present era across the board. So there's no reason why diagnostics for other diseases should not be free, or OPD treatment for other diseases like hypertension and diabetes should not be of the same, with the same benefits. Because otherwise we have patients who are unable to bear the costs of travel, of treatment for numerous other conditions. And again, we are only covering the cost of hospitalization, which is a very small part of the whole, healthcare expense. So this would be my, take on the lessons from the pandemic. Lastly, it again exposed the fact that we in India confuse healthcare with disease care, and we do not have sufficient expertise in public health in prevention and in managing outbreaks as we should. So often, you know, whenever there's an outbreak, the call always is that somebody from, you know, Delhi, from the National Center for Disease Control, will come down to investigate. But if we are to manage this outbreak, and which is the harbinger of many other outbreaks that may follow, and which do occur in India all the time, then we have to have, really speaking, a clear distinction between people who are managing patients and people who are looking at the disease burden, outbreaks, and focusing on prevention and the other managerial aspects. So the fact that we do not have that cadre really impacted on our ability to manage this effectively. And wherever we had that cadre or that understanding, and Kerala, for example, has handled, you know, outbreaks like Nipah, et cetera, in the past. So I think they benefited from that experience because of their better capacity to handle the situation.
You've been working on nutrition and the link between nutrition and infectious diseases. One question I have is this impact of the COVID on the economy, in particular loss of jobs and income. We have very anecdotal kind of reports of people eating less or hunger issues going up. What is your take on this? Is there greater hunger? I mean, it was already a bad situation before the pandemic. Do you foresee a big jump in hunger-related, nutrition-related problems, and that linked to the various other health issues that come together with it?
Sure. So now India is often talked as having a double burden of, you know, both undernutrition or malnutrition and now overweight obesity, but this is occurring as a problem in two distinct parts of the population. So we know that there's a huge informal sector in India. A lot of them are engaged in agriculture and other, manual work, so to say. And they do not have any income security, any job security. And these are the people who historically and even to the present day are the first to, you know, bear the shocks of any economic crisis. So as we know, the Indian economy was not doing too well even in the pre-COVID situation. And the impact was most visible on this group, which suffered job loss and decline in incomes. And I think what you talk of anecdotal reports, again, from different parts of India, people have reported because of the food prices going up, because of incomes declining, much poorer diets and much less diversity in diets, with people not able to afford what would be an adequate protein intake in their diets. And I think this is reflected even in the data emerging from the rounds of the National Family Health Survey 5, where most of the surveys were done in the pre-pandemic period. And this has shown that actually in many states, you have a worsening of childhood malnutrition and what we call as stunting and wasting in many states of India, even in the pre-COVID pandemic period. And this has been taken note of, but what followed thereafter, we don't have clear data emerging. But all indications are that, for example, the World Food Program has said, FAO's report, Food and Agriculture Organization's report, indicated the fact that, you know, suddenly after a series of years of decline, the number of people suffering chronic hunger has increased last year. And the impact of this increasing hunger and decreasing diversity of food actually is, one can say it's a silent emergency, it's a silent epidemic, because it expresses itself in many forms which need to be really counted. So for example, if there's worsening maternal nutrition, it would translate into lower birth weight babies, which will be more likely to have, you know, poorer survival after birth. You have children who are undernourished, the statistic which nobody really talks about in India is still we have about 8 lakh children dying under the age of 5 years, which is one of the highest in the world. And a good proportion, nearly half at least, have been attributable to the effects of malnutrition. So if these children were better nourished, the diseases which kill them, which may be diarrhea, which may be pneumonia, would not be as severe. So this link between undernutrition and the susceptibility to diseases and the link between undernutrition severity of disease has been long established. In fact, nearly 60 years ago, there was a monograph published which talked about nutrition infection. And it showed that this was a kind of a relationship where malnutrition predisposed to infection and infection worsened malnutrition. And this is the vicious cycle which ultimately results in the kind of, you know, almost 4 lakh deaths in India in children due to coexisting malnutrition under the age of 5 years. And there are again other nutrition sensitive diseases like tuberculosis, for example. We know that almost 40% of India's population is already infected with the germ, but it is only an effective immune system which keeps the germ under check and prevent it from, you know, progressing to active TB. But when you have a system weakened by malnutrition, this dormant germ can really get progress to active disease. And this has again been seen in many situations across the world. Whenever there's food insecurity, the TB rates go up. So this has been seen in Cuba in the 1990s, in Zimbabwe in the food crisis of 2008. And whenever they restored the food supply, the things would actually stabilize. So TB rates are, the TB burden is a very sensitive indicator of the degree of malnutrition in the country. But often because this is due to adult malnutrition, it gets much less attention. Adult malnutrition gets much less attention than childhood malnutrition or maternal malnutrition. Lastly, which people do not correlate is the fact that the high prevalence of many diseases in India in adults like diabetes and early onset of, you know, heart diseases is also linked to malnutrition at a critical phase in life, which is when the child is developing in the mother's womb. So if a child is born malnourished and it has not got the adequate nutrition during its developmental phase, they are born almost programmed for a higher risk of many of these non-communicable diseases later on. So the cells in the pancreas, which secrete insulin, get affected, the liver gets affected, the kidneys are affected. So the kind of morbidity we are seeing in patients in India, that we have a lot of diabetes, is also actually linked to maternal undernutrition and the undernutrition of children. So the impact of this worsening food security will cut across age groups, lead to arrest of the decline in under 5 mortality. It is likely to increase the TB, new cases of TB. And the children who are born are likely to suffer a higher risk of many other diseases in the future. So this impact of malnutrition as something which we do not register. So malnutrition is a kind of no man's land where people neither associate it as a communicable disease or a non-communicable disease, but it affects both. So I really feel that nutrition should get a central focus, and not only nutrition of children, but of adults also in the whole COVID response. And unfortunately, that is where actually children, the Anganwadis got disrupted, the midday meal programs, were affected. So what we are seeing is that if we continue to neglect nutrition in this phase, we are likely to have consequences for health and disease across the spectrum. And of course, in TB, if you have malnutrition, it also makes the TB disease more severe and more likely to result in death. So that is again one pathway in India which is happening, that people who are undernourished get more TB, and when they get TB, the malnutrition gets more severe, which in turn leads to more severe disease. And that is one reason why we have so many TB deaths in India.
It's been observed that, you know, the problems of health, severe health issues, whether it's tuberculosis or malnutrition, are not general in the sense they're not uniformly available, seen throughout the Indian population, but specific to certain communities in India, particularly the indigenous communities like Adivasis or Dalits.
Yeah.
So there is a very focused kind of, it's almost as if these people are being deliberately targeted by disease, though we know that disease doesn't have a mind of its own. It's just that their social conditions are such. As a doctor, what do you think of this? Because medical education would not deal with these kind of sociological issues. But from your experience, you've worked in Chhattisgarh and many places. What is your observation about how health issues are not general, but have to be contextualized in specific communities and locations and situations?
Yeah. So I would say that it has been said of TB that TB is a social disease with medical aspects, which in a way puts the social factors in as primary and other factors as secondary. And although this may be not intuitive to people who have always been taught that TB is a disease because of a germ and anybody can get it, but that is not true. That is only half a truth, because who gets exposed to TB, what happens, under what conditions does the person get exposed, what happens when the person develops the disease, how severe the disease will become in a particular person, whether the person will be able to access care, what is the quality of care that the patient will receive, and ultimately, will he be able to adhere to that care, is all determined by social factors. So, and this is true not only for TB. So although anybody will, can in one sense develop diabetes, diabetes in a poor patient, in a poor person is a totally different ball game, because they have multiple disadvantages of, not able to access care, not able to afford the kind of care, not able to adhere care or to monitoring. And therefore we see all the outcomes, the bad outcomes of, diabetes or TB or any other disease that we can talk about are concentrated in the poor. So unless we have, as you said rightly, a context where we give importance to these social factors which are producing disease and which are affecting our response to disease. So we now the doctors usually say that what can we do about poverty? But are we sensitive to the issues which arise out of poverty in a patient? Are our health systems structured in a way that they are accessible to the poor? So is the health system pro-poor? So although we may not be able to deal with poverty, we can definitely mitigate its effect. So wherever you have a system of universal health coverage, for example, you do not see the kind of impact as we see in India, where we do not have a system of universal health coverage. So and these social factors are not, I would say they are also socio-political, because it is primarily an issue of income or income distribution and access to resources, which generate the whole factors which result in disease. So I think that although again in the early 2000s there was the Commission on Social Determinants and Health chaired by Dr. Michael Mormont, who has been a leading figure in showing how social factors affect disease burden even in a country like UK, where everybody has access to a minimum level of healthcare. So that report actually made a lot of observations and modeled a lot of recommendations, but I think internationally and in other ways, there has been little response to that report, which was published in 2008. So we need to contextualize these factors, and we need to be moving towards a more socially relevant and equitable health system.